Welcome back to Radio EcoShock. As we cover the ongoing nuclear disaster in Japan, we're looking at the way the government and the company withheld information, and then we'll move on to how this could impact reactors in the United States and Canada. Democracy Now!, Monday the 14th.
I want to go back to Yurika Ayukawa, joining us from Tokyo, and also share with you our condolences for the horrific catastrophe that your country is undergoing right now. You're formerly with the Citizens Nuclear Information Center, now a professor of the environment at Chiba University in Japan. What is the government telling you, and are you satisfied with that right now?
What the government and the Tokyo Electric is saying is what just as Kevin explained. They are trying to downgrade or their critical situation and make the people don't get worried. So we are totally not sure. There's no transparency about the information that they're saying. They don't give enough know precisely what to say, but nothing concrete is being announced. So we don't know what is really going on. So there's no transparency in what they're speaking. On the other hand, just as Kevin said, there's nothing spoken about the spent fuel pools. So that's another hazardous matter that will come up later after this thing is, finished. I'm very unsatisfied with how the government is treating this. And if there was an article in the New York Times about this radioactive contamination by U.S. Air freight, the U.S. Navy, I wish you could make it a big story that could appear in the Japanese newspapers, because all the Japanese people are thinking, or the government is thinking, is only about Japan. They're not thinking what kind of effects it will bring to other countries. And I just read that the French embassy is making the French people living in Japan to leave the country. It's really that kind of thing should make news in Japan, but
Yurika Ayukawa, can you also talk about the number of people, more than 180,000 people have been evacuated around one of the nuclear power plants? Up to 160 may have been exposed with radiation. Of course, this is very early on to know this. May not be able to return for a long time.
Not all media is created equally, as we certainly found out this past week. Compare this coverage early on the Friday night, first from ABC, then Al Jazeera, and finally Russia Today.
More now on the nuclear facility we just mentioned in Japan that is raising so much concern. The cooling system failed, prompting local evacuations. And we're joined now by our Ned Potter with more on this alarming situation. Ned, it seems like the concern is actually growing over one power plant in particular.
Well, the plant is called the Fukushima Daiichi Nuclear Power Plant. It's northeast of Tokyo, and the Nuclear Safety Agency in Japan was trying to play down the issue. It said there has been no radiation leak. The plant did shut down the way it was supposed to, but they were keeping people 2 kilometers, about 3 kilometers, about 2 miles away, and privately, they have said to American authorities that they were concerned.
Well, let's get more on what Japan is calling an atomic emergency. Radiation levels at a nuclear plant damaged by the quake have been recorded at 1,000 times above normal. People living near the Fukushima plant, 240 kilometers north of Tokyo, have been evacuated. The cooling systems in 2 reactors failed when the quake caused a power outage. Steam is being released to relieve the pressure. The vapor is radioactive, but safety officials say there's no immediate health hazard. Japan's Prime Minister Naoto Kan says the nuclear facility is his most pressing concern.
An emergency situation, meantime, has been declared at the Fukushima nuclear plant in the northeast of the country after it was damaged. The pressure inside the reactor has been rising tonight, raising fears of a radiation leak. However, Japan's Nuclear Safety Agency says to try to reduce the pressure, radioactive vapor may be released, and that poses no risk to humans or the environment.
By the way, I put up a slew of handy Japan nuclear disaster links in my Radio EcoShock blog for the week of March 16, 2011, including a page holding video links from 15 live video feeds, a news junkie's delight, except the news is poisonous these days. Find that at ecoshock.info. If you are at a computer right now, go ahead, ecoshock.info, while you listen. I also put out 3 Japan Atomic Emergency Bulletins. That's what they called it, the government, Atomic Emergency. And I put it in Radio EcoShock podcasts for our subscribers. And that's a good reason to subscribe to the free podcast. Click on the podcast button right on your main page at ecoshock.org or get it from iTunes or one of the many other repackagers. And be ready. Here are just a few more clips from the disaster before we investigate an even bigger developing story beyond reactor buildings and reactors themselves. NHK, Friday the 11th.
You've just tuned in to NHK World. We're covering the situation here in Japan. According to the Nuclear Power Security Agency, 5 nuclear power plants in northeastern Japan have been shut down. Now, according to the Transport Ministry, Haneda International Airport has closed all runways. Haneda International Airport in Tokyo has closed all runways.
CNN, Monday the 14th.
The 3, they are right here, all 3 are in trouble tonight. All 3 have had various degrees of cooling issues and perhaps meltdowns in the core. It is number 2 they are most worried about. Earlier today, they said all of the rods had been fully exposed. About 2.5 hours ago, another explosion at reactor 2. And what Tokyo officials are saying is the radioactive readings have gone up and they've evacuated operators not directly involved with the most urgent of the operations there. The damage was done to the suppression pool, and that's what gets dangerous. That is down in here. You have a nuclear reactor. You have the rods right here. These are highly radioactive. You need to keep the temperatures cool in here to keep from having a meltdown. These have been fully exposed, which raises the risks of a full meltdown, and now they're saying there's been some sort of a problem in the suppression pool, evacuation of the operators being carried out. This is the first time in this crisis that that has happened, some operators being taken out. Now, we want to be careful with the information. We are trying to get more on this information, but this is a deepening nuclear crisis at a major nuclear facility. 3 reactors in trouble, 1 in grave trouble. It's about 150 miles to the north of Tokyo.
BBC, Tuesday the 15th.
All eyes are still on the nuclear installation at Fukushima Daiichi, about 140 miles north of here. And this is the place, of course, where there have already been 3 explosions and 1 fire in the last few days. This morning, there are reports of yet another fire in another reactor. And the spent fuel rods that are stored in reactors 5 and 6 are now apparently also heating up. All very unsettling indeed.
Yes, the waste pools. Starting on Friday, I heard small voices, including from Greenpeace, saying, what about the waste pools? Why haven't we heard any reports about that? Indeed, these watery graves for all the nuclear waste ever burned by each reactor seem to be a mystery, even to the biggest, most influential media. The government said nothing. The utility said nothing. But nuclear waste is far from dead. It will live on in danger for more than 100,000 years, our awful gift to humanity and all the other species, perhaps to the end of humanity. Also, 1 or 2 generations could keep all the gadgets always on and waste electricity in a million wonderful ways. Until the spent, but still deadly with radioactivity, the spent fuel rods are kept constantly cooled by water. They can catch fire and emit far more radioactivity than Chernobyl ever did. It can't blow up into the upper atmosphere like the Soviet reactor, but it can blow in the wind for generation after generation until the fires are put out and the pumping resumed almost forever. Now that the Japanese government admits the 1 and perhaps several waste pools are out of control, out of water and burning, it's time to talk about them, no? Democracy Now!, Monday the 14th.
Lane and Stephen here on Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman.
As we continue on the catastrophe in Japan, we turn now to Kevin Camps, specialist in nuclear waste at Nuclear Watch Group Beyond Nuclear. Last year, he was in Japan assessing the state of the nuclear facilities there. Kevin Camps, explain exactly what is happening in these nuclear reactors. Japan has some 55 nuclear plants, nuclear reactors within five nuclear plants.
Yes, Amy, as your Japanese guest said, the cores of at least three reactors now at Fukushima Daiichi are uncovered from water, and so therefore a meltdown is likely underway at three reactors. Something that has not gotten much mention yet are the pools of high-level radioactive waste at these very same reactors, which also need cooling. They need electricity to cool, to circulate the water with circulation pumps. And each of these, well, two of these three reactors have suffered explosions, as your guests may have seen online in videos. And the pools that hold the high-level radioactive waste are located above, just slightly above and to the right of the reactors. So our hope and our prayer at this point is that not only the reactor itself, the containment around the reactor, but also the pools, which contain massive amounts of radioactivity, have somehow remained intact. That's what the officials are saying. As Harvey said, we don't know whether to believe them or not. In the pools, you have a lot of radioactive waste, which contains a lot of hazardous radioactivity. And now, because those explosions took place at two of those reactors, that is to open to the sky at this point. There is no roof or walls over the pools. And the hope is, but we have indications that at Fukushima Daiichi Unit 1, that the pool is experiencing difficulty in cooling the waste because electricity has been lost. They lost the electricity grid with the earthquake. They lost the emergency diesel generators with the tsunami. The backup batteries only had a life of 4 to 8 hours. That's long past. And I just wanted to comment on what Fertel of Nuclear Energy Institute said. Oh, we have great earthquake regulations in the United States. The reactor that got me involved in this issue in southwest Michigan, Palisades Nuclear Power Plant, has been storing its high-level radioactive waste in outdoor silos of concrete and steel on the beach of Lake Michigan, 100 yards from the water, in violation of NRC earthquake regulations since 1993. An NRC whistleblower in Chicago called attention to this problem in 1994. Nothing's been done. There are two dozen containers, dry casks, of high-level radioactive waste next to the drinking water supply for 40 million people downstream in the U.S. and Canada in violation of NRC earthquake regulations. And another reactor in the U.S., Fermi 2, also in Michigan. Just another example of how safety is being just thrown to the wind. The emergency diesel generators, which have proven to be such a central component of this disaster in Japan because they were located vulnerable to the tsunami. What appears to have happened is the tsunami flooded the basements where these emergency diesel generator connections are at. So even though they brought in mobile units, new emergency diesel generators to hook them up to run the safety systems, the basements were flooded where they needed to do the hookup. Well, at Fermi 2 in Michigan, again, the same exact design as the Fukushima Daiichi Unit 1, the emergency diesel generators in the year 2006 were discovered to have not been operable for 20 years. From 1986 to 2006, the emergency diesel generators at Fermi 2 in Michigan would not have operated if called upon. So thank God that they were not needed during that 20-year period of time, or we could have lost Detroit, or we could have lost Toledo, or we could have lost Windsor, Ontario. That's the level of safety with the United States Nuclear Regulatory Commission and the industry in this country.
We don't have time to cover all the nuclear backlash in Europe, the 50,000-plus people who formed that human chain from Stuttgart, Germany, to an old nuclear plant the government promised to close and then reneged. After the Japanese debacle and with elections looming, German Chancellor Angela Merkel suddenly revised her decision to allow 10 aging nuclear plants to continue operating. The Swiss have also called off planned new reactors. There is a chain reaction of caution and nuclear fear spreading around the world. I do want to share a couple of important clips with our American listeners before we get to Canada. Democracy Now! Monday the 14th.
I was in Japan in the mid-1970s. That's exactly what they said about Fukushima. I spoke at the Kashiwazaki plant, which less than 5 years ago was also hit by a huge earthquake, and 7 reactors shut there. The people of Japan were repeatedly assured that this could not happen. Those reactors in Japan and the ones in the United States are designed to withstand a 7.5 Richter earthquake, and this is a 9.0, which is more than 10, significantly higher impact than what they're designed to withstand. We're also seeing pressures inside these reactor pressure vessels and containment domes that are in excess of design capacity. The nuclear industry is defending a product that cannot withstand Mother Nature, both in the United States and Japan. You have to remember that the Japanese industry is highly advanced. Both Westinghouse and General Electric, the two major purveyors of nuclear plants in the United States, are now owned by Japanese companies. This is not the Soviet Union. This is a highly advanced country that cannot cope with nuclear power plants that have been sustained damage that was predicted. We predicted that these nuclear plants would be hit by earthquakes and by tsunamis, and the Japanese government and the nuclear industry laughed it off, just as Mr. Furtick has done yesterday. Every nuclear plant in the United States is susceptible to this kind of damage and this kind of disaster, and it's time that they be shut in any kind of prudent mindset that will protect the people of this country and our economy, by the way, as we're going to see what's happening to the Japanese economy.
We're speaking with anti-nuclear activist Harvey Wasserman, speaking to us from Columbus, Ohio.
MSNBC, Monday the 14th.
Located in Southern California near the San Andreas fault line. The San Onofre site is a particular safety risk. According to Massachusetts Congressman Edward Markey, the ranking Democrat on the House Natural Resources Committee.
They are in the process right now with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission of finishing a process that will make it possible to build and license a Westinghouse AP1000 reactor. One of the senior scientists at the Nuclear Regulatory Commission said that's the kind of plant that could crack, shatter like a glass cup under stress.
Congressman Markey has called on President Obama and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission to consider imposing a moratorium on building nuclear power plants in seismically active areas. That's an overreaction, according to Republican Senator Lamar Alexander, whose home state of Tennessee operates 3 nuclear reactors.
It's important that we be clear about the risks that each type of energy poses. But it's also important to remember that we don't abandon highway systems because bridges and overpasses collapse during earthquakes. The 1.6 million of us who fly daily would not stop flying after a tragic airplane crash.
Democracy Now, Monday the 14th.
I want to go back to Harvey Wasserman. The news out of Switzerland, they've suspended the approvals process for 3 nuclear power stations so safety standards can be revisited after the crisis in Japan. The German government, facing pressure to reverse its plan to extend the life of Germany's 17 nuclear reactors as domestic opponents of atomic power, took Japan's worsening nuclear crisis as validation of their views. Talk about the reaction now around the world, these protests that are taking place.
Well, the protests are huge, Amy, and specifically here in the United States, we're facing 2 very tangible issues in the near term. The owners of the nuclear plants all across the United States, including these very old reactors, some of which are virtually identical to Fukushima 1, are going in for license extensions. And so you have reactors that are 40 or approaching 40 years old, more than 30 years old, and the owners are asking the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and getting approval to extend their life. I hope that the NRC and that the public in general will take note that these reactors now cannot withstand these kinds of pressures and should absolutely not have their license extended. Secondly, we're facing in the Congress pressure from the Obama administration and from supporters of the nuclear industry to give them $36 billion in loan guarantees to build still more nuclear plants. This is something that really has to be stopped, because we've seen in Japan And both Kevin and I have been there, and we've seen the kinds of things that the industry has said, the kind of safety that they claim that they can deliver, that these are false promises. And I tell you that the Japanese industry assured the Japanese public that Fukushima and there are 55 reactors in Japan, all of which are on earthquake faults and near the ocean. The Japanese industry assured the Japanese public that these reactors could withstand exactly these kinds of events. This is not a surprise, what's happened at Fukushima. This was predicted. We've predicted similar things here in the United States, especially at those reactors in California. They are going for license extension at Diablo Canyon. This is unconscionable, especially in light of what's happened here. So these are tangible things that are happening. These demonstrations around the world will certainly escalate because we've seen now that the nuclear industry cannot be trusted, and this technology simply does not belong on this planet.
Canada has such a dubious nuclear history. We gave India the bomb and helped Pakistan get nuclear weapons too. We sold a reactor to the dictator of Romania for jam and coal. Our engineers watch shaved head prisoners build it. When our own reactors leak, the government reopens them, even with no backup generators at all. Let's spend a few minutes with Greenpeace nuclear campaigner Sean Patrick. And by the way, Sean gives us a website with a very different plan, a way forward, even solving the climate problem without nuclear power.
A big issue that I'm concerned about is the independence of our federal nuclear regulator. You may recall 2 years ago the Harper government fired the former president, Linda Keane, for forcing Atomic Energy of Canada to install earthquake-resistant emergency backup systems on its NRU reactor. At the time, the industry kept saying, claiming this is a low-probability risk and just dismissing it. But, you know, a few years later, I think Linda Keane is being vindicated. And what was she trying to do? She was trying to do her job, which was impose international safety standards, which we can quibble about whether they're enough. But I think we have a politicized regulator, and that raises a lot of questions of trust. So I think we should have a review in Canada of our nuclear regulatory system and our reactors as to what level of safety is tolerable for the Canadian public.
And did I hear a rumor in Canada that in the financial press that the public employees' pension plan was considering buying Atomic Energy of Canada Limited, the purveyor of nuclear equipment to the world?
Yes, OMERS is looking at buying ACL. And this raises a whole other discussion. The federal government is trying to privatize Atomic Energy of Canada Limited. So that's our vendor of the CANDU reactor design. And one of the problems they're having is no one wants to buy CANDUs. Even though there was a lot of talk of a nuclear renaissance worldwide for the past 10 years, it hasn't actually meant a lot of sales. And that's because the reactors are still really expensive. And CANDU, as a niche reactor design, isn't picking up any sales. And it's a huge drain on the public purse. So the Harper government's actually trying to do a good thing, which is stop the bleeding of federal taxpayer dollars. They gave them $892 million last year. But the problem they're facing is no one wants to buy it. And now there's seemingly a deal OMERS is looking at with SNC-Lavalin and trying to invest in it. Whether that's a good investment for the owners of those pensions, that's a complete other question. And Greenpeace is following the situation closely because we want to make sure that in any sale, the risk does not remain with the federal taxpayer for reactor construction and repair. Those liabilities should be with people that want to build reactors. It's called the polluter pays principle. And right now, ACL backstops and reduces the cost unfairly of a lot of reactor projects by using federal taxpayer dollars.
So just to make sure I heard you right, the Canadian government gave almost $1 billion to this company and they haven't made a single reactor sale in that year or in even years previous?
Oh, yeah. It's a little absurd. We've given over $20 billion to Atomic Energy of Canada since 1952. They've only ever managed to design and sell one reactor to CANDU 6, which was developed in the 1960s. And since then, they've never been able to sell any other, get others off the drawing board. And as I said, it's a lot of bleeding that's going on. A lot of money that went out in our budget last year was to pay for the cost overruns for reactor repairs in New Brunswick and in Ontario. And again, what goes on is they sign these risk transfer agreements where the operator of the reactor says, ACL, you repair the reactor. If there's overruns, we don't want to pay for it. And ACL, which is an accountable for things, signs these deals, and then when cost overruns happen, they just pass it on to the federal taxpayer. What that does in our electricity markets is that provides an unfair advantage to nuclear operators because they're getting this huge federal subsidy. Whereas if they had to include those types of costs up front, green energy and conservation and local generation would look and be a lot more competitive.
Are there new reactors planned for Canada, and what will this Japanese situation do for that?
Well, one of Greenpeace's biggest concerns is in Ontario. The McGuinty government is pushing forward with a plan to build two new reactors at the Darlington site east of Toronto to replace the Pickering reactors when they close in 2020. So we've been asking, why would you do this when there are more cost-effective options? They were told in 2006 new reactors would cost $6 billion. Came out in 2009, it would actually cost $26 billion. In spite of the facts changing, the government has stayed wedded to this plan to build new reactors. And at the same time, we've had no public forum that actually looks at alternatives, such as green energy, whether they're cost-effective. And the safety reviews, which is going to be a big concern in the Japanese context, significant accidents, as we've seen in Japan, they haven't been on the table of environmental assessments either. And that's something we're going to be demanding in the weeks to come.
We're all using electricity, Sean Patrick, and we don't want to just turn out the lights. What is Greenpeace's answer to our energy needs?
We've produced a document worldwide. It's called the Energy Revolution. And we do this modeling with the German Aerospace Agency. And we look out to 2050. How could we stop climate change while ending nuclear hazards using existing technology? And we've been running this modeling for about 10 years. We've actually been shown to be conservative when we first did it in 1998, and our projections for 2010 for wind power, we were conservative, and wind power is outshooting our own expectations, which gives us hope. But we have put out an international report on that. It's also been modeled for Canada, showing how we could replace nuclear stations while fighting climate change. In Ontario last year, we put out a report specifically with the Pembina Institute, showing how it would be cheaper to invest in a portfolio of green energy, replace the Pickering station, and build new reactors. And that's a very important part of this debate. Nuclear power is the only industry that has never been able to reduce its costs. Green energy, though, we're seeing innovation every year, and part of that is these are small sources of power. Every year, they develop a new generation, and they learn from it, and costs are coming down. And I think that's one of our greatest hopes for fighting climate change. Green energy is already more cost-effective than nuclear power, despite the fact that nuclear power has received trillions of dollars in research subsidies over the past 50 years.
Can we find these reports online and where?
Go to greenpeace.ca and you can find our Energy Revolution report as well as the Green Energy 2.0 report on Ontario and new reactors. And there you can also find, we're trying to post as soon as we can get it up, any new updates on the Japanese situation. They're monitoring. When we know things that are confirmed, we try to apply updates, and it's to our best knowledge of what's actually going on to help people sift through the different speculation that's going on in the media.
From Greenpeace Canada, we've been talking with Sean Patrick. Thank you so much for your time. I know you're swamped and busy.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
That's all we can squeeze in today. Much more to come. The chain of Japanese reactor failures isn't going to end this week or next week or the week after. It will change. It will change the world. It will change your life. Count on it. I know programs about anything nuclear are the least popular we can make. We hate to hear about it. The risks and realities are so awful, they hurt our minds. Humans in mind and body never evolved to handle the power of the atom and the building blocks of energy and matter in the universe. Bye-bye from Alex Smith from Radio EcoShock for this week. Find our website at ecoshock.org.
Okay, it's everyone here.
You mean just all of the people?
Yeah, and all of their peers, and all of their pets, and their chandeliers.